I don't remember much before I got here. Just a few quick flashes of getting T-boned at an intersection. And one time when I opened my eyes in the ambulance here. When I woke up, I was instantly greeted by the ever so familiar stench of hospital-grade disinfectant. Once my headache disappeared, I was left waiting straight up in the hospital bed, my heart monitor going haywire. Quickly, Dr. Hansen, or at least that is what his name tag said, appeared in my doorway. "Calm down, son, you're safe now," he said in his fatherly and calm voice. "I need to ask you a few questions." He could see the dazed confusion plastered across my face, still trying to figure out what planet I was on. "Do you remember what happened?" he asked just as soothingly as when he first entered. "Not really, no," I said, still groggy. "That's okay. Do you need anything?" "Yeah, actually, a water would be great. I'll have a nurse bring it in to you. In the meantime, get some rest." Dr. Hansen left the room. A few minutes later, I felt my hand fiddling with the TV remote. I turned it on and only to get a no signal pop up on my screen. After my valiant attempt to watch some Jerry Springer, I waited a few more minutes for that water. After a good 15 minutes, I realized something. There was no noise. Just quiet. No conversations taking place. No phones ringing. Not even any footsteps outside the door. I finally decided to stand up and take a look around my room. Right next to my bed was a nightstand with all of my belongings in a bag, including the phone I'm writing this on. After getting out of the hospital gown and into my own clothes, I decided to take a look around the hospital itself. When I opened the door, I was greeted with the same silence as in the hospital room. I decided to keep walking despite every fiber of my being screaming for any semblance of normalcy or comfort. For what felt like hours, I wandered around the same repeating corridors with that shitty and nauseated aroma that is ingrained into every hospital ever built. Eventually, I got the idea to just walk down the same hallway and see where it takes me. For another 30 minutes, I followed the same corridor. It only led me back to my own hospital room. Where the fuck am I? Every hallway and corridor here leads me back to the same fucking room. There are no windows, no reception desk, no people. What is going on here? I felt like I was going crazy here. I keep thinking I'm hearing people behind me only for there to be nothing there. There is nothing here. Does anyone know where I am or how to get out of here? Please, I'm getting desperate. I'm not even sure if this will make it to anybody, but anything at this point is worth a shot. Well, it's been a few days since my last post, and I have some developments. I saw your comments telling me to use the phone I'm typing on to call somebody. To be honest, I hadn't thought of that. I had been so caught up in all of the commotion, I hadn't thought of trying to call people. The first person I tried to call was my girlfriend, Dina. I'm crazy about her. Have been since the day we met. I knew she would answer her phone on the first ring if I called. It rang once, then nothing. Busy signal. The next person I tried was my dad. We were supposed to be working on his old 69 Mustang. Thing is a beast of a car. Same thing. Rang once, then busy. I put my phone away. Another thing someone mentioned was to try windows. The problem with that is, there are none. There were curtains in my room drawn to hide the giant slab of untreated concrete or whatever the hell that stuff was. By this point, the feeling of hopelessness had thoroughly sunk his way into my mind. I collapsed on the fake hospital room floor in defeat. What the hell am I supposed to do? Felt like I had been ripped out of my life and placed into a bad dream. I decided to cope by crawling back into the bed I woke up in and asleep for the first time in I don't know how long. There was no sun anywhere. I slept for God knows how long. The time on my phone seemed like a monument to this past. I began to slowly come to grips with the reality that I may very well die in that hospital, or whatever it was. I woke up with a start to a screeching hiss what sounded like a PA system. No words, just this loud and ear-piercing noise. I looked around to see a hot plate sitting by the door. No one around, just a plate of food. I jumped out of bed and flung the door open looking for someone. Something. Food doesn't just appear out of nowhere. Something has to make it and bring it. I looked around and saw nothing. I was furious. Not only was I trapped in this hellhole, the people that brought me here are now teasing me. They were making me think I was losing my mind, and maybe I was. But to do that, that's a special kind of asshole. I became so full of anger that I, for no reason, lost everything I had ever worked for, the people I love. All gone, I picked up the plate and threw it at the blank concrete spot on the wall, and let out a primal scream. To my surprise, the plate left a hole in the concrete. Not a chip, but a hole. I approached it cautiously and peered through. Stairs. I looked around the room for something to help me break the rest of it down, and my eyes landed on a broken piece of plate. Without hesitation, I picked it up and began hammering against the wall. Over and over again, I pounded on that wall, the piece of plate cutting deeper and deeper into my skin. I didn't care. I saw a shot at freedom, so I took it. Eventually, I had put a hole in it that I was able just to crawl through. I ran up those stairs as fast as my legs allowed, only to come to another door. My hand fell into the doorknob. I twisted it, and it opened right up. The door revealed an empty room with windows all along the farthest wall that showed a forest. In the distance was what looked to me a small town. Standing in the middle of the room was Dr. Hansen, if that was even his real name. "Sorry it took so long for your water. It just slipped my mind," he said, smiling. "Why am I here? Who are you? What is going?" I shouted before he cut me off. "I have to applaud you. You figured out what was happening long before any of the others did." "Others?" I asked in confusion. "You think you're the only one we've been watching?" he said again in that snide and condescending voice. "Come with me and all will be explained," he offered by his hand. I grabbed it and brought my fist to the bridge of his nose as hard as I could, sending him collapsing to the floor. I got on top of him and began hitting him over and over again. One hit after another, I screamed things at him. I don't remember, but what all I knew was that I was screaming. Before I knew it, we were in a puddle of blood, the same blood that dripped from my knuckles and stained my hands. I stood up and collected myself. The silence began to overwhelm me again. I looked around to see there was a door behind where Dr. Hansen had been standing. I walked over and opened it to see another set of goddamn stairs that led down to another door I walked down. Still in shock of what I just did, the door opened to outside, the actual outdoors. For the first time in what felt like years, I smelled fresh air. The door opened in the middle of a forest, but in the distance, about 400 yards away, was a main road. I followed it until I came to the town I had seen from the window earlier. I had walked into the local diner. The front sign read D's Diner. Below it in smaller letters was a sentence that read, "Best in all of Tennessee." I lived in Wisconsin, nowhere near Tennessee. I walked inside and sat at the counter next to a man in a button-down jeans, boots, and the strange part was that there was a surgical mask hanging from his ear. "Rough day," a lady from behind the counter, who I presume was Dee, asked nervously, noticing the blood all over me. She was also wearing a mask. "Yeah, you could say that," I said, chuckling for the first time since I had been put in this whole mess. "What's with the mask? You're just pulling my leg, aren't you?" she said, letting out a reserved chortle. "No, ma'am, I'm just a little confused." "What are you confused about? Corona has been on the news for what feels like forever now," she said, just as confused as I was. "What's corona?" "Now I know you're messing with me. You know that Chinese virus that them Chinese people cooked up in a lab over there? Whole crock of shit, if you ask me," she said, becoming more comfortable with my presence in her diner. "Oh yeah, that," I said, still confused but changing the subject. Do either one of you have the date? I do, the man next to me said, finally talking for the first time since I had entered the diner. The 18th. Christmas is in a week. Okay, thank you, I said, trying to hide my terror. I left the diner in a hurry. Could it really almost have been Christmas? My crash was in February. Christmas had just happened. How long was I in a coma for? All of these questions raced through my mind. I kept walking through the town until I found a motel. Joe Mega Motel, the sign read. I walked inside to the front desk and asked for a room. I must have forgotten I was still covered by blood, as he gave me the same confused and scared expression as the lady in the diner. When I got to my room, I took a long and warm shower for a few reasons. One, because I was filthy and just needed one in the first place. The other being the ability to let my mind wander and come up with a solution as to what I should do next. Right now, I'm writing this on a bus on my way somewhere new where I can keep an eye on what has been going on with these people. Dr. Hansen's words still echoing through my mind. You really think you're the only one we've been watching? That we part is what's bothering me. How deep does this rabbit hole go? No matter how much I want to, I can't stop thinking about it. So, to cap this off, Dina, if this somehow makes its way to you, that's where I've been for the past 11 months or so. Goodbye. As I write this today, it is in the hope that my experience will help someone. I must admit that my story is unusual, and I know most of you won't believe it, but at least I'll be able to look at myself in the mirror, knowing I did everything in my power to save innocent people. To make sense, I guess I should start from the beginning, the moment I first met Amiko. The first time I met her was outside my front door. A few days before I had posted an ad on Craigslist to find a roommate. I didn't enjoy sharing my living space, but I'm a student and my family can't afford to help me pay for my tuition or rent. So I had to be creative to make and save money. My boyfriend had just broken up with me and I needed someone to pay his half of the rent. My apartment was situated in Paris, had two bedrooms, and was close to transportation and several shops. Not long after posting the ad, my inbox was almost full of all these emails I received. To be honest, I was not intending to open them all. I did not want to spend hours or even days going through each message. So, start with, I opted for a first-come-first-serve approach, which was not effective. I don't know if people were lazy or because the offer was so interesting, but all the emails I had opened were the same. Hey, I just saw your ad on Craigslist, and I'm interested, looking forward to hearing from you. I quickly got bored reading, almost the same thing over and over. So, I went to the kitchen to grab some snacks and coffee to help me get through this boring task. When I sat back in front of my laptop, I noticed that an email had just arrived, and the address directly caught my attention. Amiko Shibata Ashanet. It was not an address I had seen before, but the name of the person let me know that the sender was a Japanese woman. It made me even more eager to open the email. You see, since my childhood, I was obsessed with everything that had to do with Japan. Japanese history, culture, and gastronomy were always a passion of mine, so much that I was slowly learning the language, intending to travel to Japan in the future, and finally visit the country that I love dearly without even setting foot in it. I quickly clicked on the email, hoping to not be disappointed by its contents. I was not. The email in front of me was long, but well written. And reading it, I learned about Amiko. She was 24, just a little bit older than me. She came to Paris so she could go to the art school in the country that, for her, represented art the best. That made me smile to know she was interested in my country, and I was in hers. And to top it all, she had added some pictures of her that she took during several trips in different regions of Japan. I was astonished by her beauty. She was tall, her eyes and smile were beautiful. She seemed genuinely nice. But what caught my attention was her hair. It was breathtaking. It was dark, thick, and fell down to her upper thighs. In one picture, she was in the middle of a forest, the rust color of the trees and leaves flying around her left, no doubt about the season. And her hair flowed in a way that seemed to have a mind of its own. When I was done reading her email and looking at the pictures over and over, I just wanted to know more about her. Who knew? Become good friends who share common interest. I applied with a time and date for her to come and visit my apartment, and to my great pleasure, she agreed to it. The day finally arrived when I opened my door. I was surprised to see that she was even more beautiful than in the pictures, and she seemed even more nicer. I greeted her with a big smile, and we started to chat as if we had known each other for years. She spoke French almost fluently, and her accent only added to her charm. After that, I gave her a tour of the apartment. She loved it, and that's how Amiko and I became roommates. It's been a year since then. Just as I suspected, our friendship only grew during the time. Amiko was easygoing and a delight to live with. She did her share of the chores. She was discreet. And the cherry on the cake was that she didn't mind spending hours talking about Japan and the little village she came from in the region of Nagano. But what I enjoyed the most were all the delicious meals she cooked for us every day. She loved to cook, but strangely she ate like a bird. I often teased her about it, saying that her appetite was as small as her mouth. And having a great sense of humor, she always laughed. Before saying that, by my logic, my big mouth was no doubt the reason I ate that much. I guess that by now you are wondering what I've just told you has to do with the warning I said I was going to give you. Well, once you hear the rest, everything will fall into place. Because as great as Amiko was, there was always something that felt weird to me. She was incapable of keeping a relationship. Every few weeks, she brought home a new guy. And that was even weirder was that she seemed happy with them, and they seemed completely mesmerized by her. I could not understand why she broke up with each guy so quickly and so suddenly. At first, every time she broke up, I would ask her why. She always gave me the same answer, that simply did not work out. Each time, she seemed so uncomfortable that I just stopped asking. A while afterwards, I discovered exactly why none of her relationship lasted. Everything happened during summer break. As usual, I decided to go back to my hometown and spent the holidays with my family. I talked to Amiko about my plan, and she seemed sad to see me go. But she quickly smiled and joked about how it would allow her to paint half-naked in the living room while listening to loud classical music. I left and I had a wonderful time with my family, but during my stay, I felt guilty leaving Amiko all by herself, as I knew I was her only friend. So I decided to surprise her and go back to our place on the afternoon of December 31st, just in time for New Year's Eve. When I arrived home, I called her name, but she wasn't there. I had assumed she'd gone shopping and would spend the evening, went out to buy some groceries to cook one of her lovely meals. As I entered the living room, I saw that Amiko kept her word. Her paintings were drying, and they were all painting of her exes. At first, I found that strange, but we all have different ways of getting over exes, right? After contemplating her beautiful work, I went to my room to unpack while waiting for her to come back. And as I was finishing, I heard the elevator stopped at our floor. Without thinking twice, I ran to Amiko's bedroom and hid under her bed so I could scare her and make the surprise even more memorable. I heard her enter the apartment and close the door behind her. I knew she had always took off her shoes first before going to her room to put her jacket inside her wardrobe, and it would be the perfect moment for me to suddenly jump out from a hiding place. As I was getting ready to jump out, I saw Emiko, in the reflection of her standing mirror next to her bed, enter the room with a guy, kissing him passionately. It was Eric, the same Emiko was dating before I left. I completely froze when I saw them. I did not know what to do. If I just popped from underneath the bed, they'd think I was crazy. But if I waited and got caught after they started to do God knows what, they'd think I was a freak. As a million scenarios went through my head, I kept looking from time to time in the mirror, trying to find a way to get out of there without being seen. But unfortunately, there was none. I had to be brave and take responsibility for my childish attempt to scare Emiko, even if it meant I would look like a complete fool in front of her and her boyfriend. As I was gathering the courage to move, I checked the mirror one last time. But something strange caught my attention. Emiko and Eric were still kissing. Eric had his hands on her lips, and Emiko had hers around his neck, with her back to the mirror. But strangely, her hair was moving, as if someone was combing through it. I could not wrap my mind around it. Was it possible? They were both already busy holding each other. I kept looking at the mirror squinting, and I nearly yelled when I understood what was going on with her hair. It was moving on its own, and as it parted on either side over her shoulders, it unveiled a mouth on her scalp, a huge mouth filled with sharp, crooked teeth and a thin, pointed tongue. Petrified by what I was witnessing, I did not move when her hair wrapped itself around Eric's neck and his wrist before tightening around it. The poor guy did not even have time to do anything, not even scream as Emiko's hair strangled him. He faced the mirror and I saw his scared, confused face before the last glimmer of life completely disappeared from his eyes. I clamped my hand over my mouth to keep my cries inside, to avoid being seen. But what I saw next was so chilling, I doubt that I would have been able to make any sound. Emiko's hair just lifted Eric's body in the air, and her second mouth opened so wide, it looked like someone had struck her on the back of her head with a hatchet, splitting it in two. Her hair started to put Eric's head inside the mouth. As it chewed away with a disgusting wet sound, it fed him in, bit by bit, until Eric's corpse disappeared completely. After that, the mouth simply closed, and Emiko's hair fell back into place, leaving no trace of the horror it hid. I stayed motionlessly shocked, but also petrified that I could meet the same end if I was discovered. As my body was shook still, Emiko turned around, tears running down her cheeks, before she left the room and closed the door behind her. Still hidden, I stayed under the bed, praying she wouldn't go to my room and to discover that I came back early from my trip. Minutes felt like hours, and my heart thudding, and my mind replayed Eric's death time and again. I heard the front door open and close. Emiko was not in the apartment anymore. I left her bedroom as quickly as I could. I went to the bathroom and splashed water on my face. I knew she could come back any minute, and I had to act as if nothing happened. After I could breathe normal again, I went to the living room and waited for her to come back. What I really wanted, though, was to get out of there and never come back. When she came back, she seemed genuinely happy to see me, but she asked me several times how long I'd been home. Of course I lied. I don't know how I did it, but I managed to see the new year in with her, before telling her I was tired and was going to my room. I spent the entire night searching the internet, looking for someone with the same experience as mine. After the research, I think I know what Emiko is. I think she is a Futakuchi Anna. According to the one website I visited, a Futakuchi Anna is a beautiful woman who has a tiny mouth and an appetite just as small. But at the back of her head, she has a huge second mouth hidden under her hair, Although she appears to eat little to no food, the mouth on the back of her head is always hungry. It is said that the second mouth also has a mind of its own and whispers horrible things to the woman. It threatens her, harasses her, and demands food frequently. It can screech and cause the poor woman afflicted with the curse an unbearable amount of pain until it is fed. The mouth can also control her hair and make it wrap around the food before shoveling it inside its mouth. The mouth helps itself to its desired meal and it eats astronomical amount of food. After reading that, I remember that Amiko was crying after her second mouth ate Eric. Everything was clear. Amiko had to find food for the monstrosity she had at the back of her head if she did not want to be persecuted and tortured by it. Now I understand. I felt pity, not fear, for Amiko. I knew why she was always so kind and joyful. She was trying to compensate for the horrible things that had to do from the monster that was using her body. And I could not decently abandon her to her misery. I was her only friend and I loved her. If she really wanted to hurt me, she would have done it now. She would have done it by now. And she seemed to attack only men, even if I cannot be completely sure about that. Anyway, as I said, it is not me I am worried about, but you. Because Amiko is planning a trip to visit several countries around the world during the summer vacation. So be careful. If you see a young and beautiful Japanese woman with luscious long hair and a small appetite, do not engage with her. Because as nice and thoughtful as she is, you won't know before it's too late that she is a Furakuchiyana. Alright, that story was really good. I'm sorry if I did not pronounce the Furakuchiyana the correct way. But this one was by the author and fellow narrator, Mademoiselle McCreepsta. She has a YouTube channel, and I will put her link down below. I hope you enjoyed these stories, and thank you. Thank you to Swamp Dweller for reading with me during this collab. He is amazing, and I will have all of his socials down below. Until next time, remember, it's scary out there.